gastar dinero que tú le das a la radio como una donación, ¿cierto? 818-985-5735. Una buena forma de utilizar tu dinero en lugar de enviarlo para engrandecer, fortalecer el militarismo, el armamentismo que se está sucediendo, que está desarrollándose a nivel mundial como a nivel local a través de los diferentes departamentos de policía. Una cosa que llamó la atención en las noticias que salieron hace unos momentos es el reporte que sale, la denuncia que sale de ex empleados de Facebook, que según dicen ellos, la empresa se encarga de mover la información. Algunos pedazos de información son eliminados, son desviados, otros son promovidos más eficientemente para apuntar a una tendencia particular. O sea, alguien lo pudiera interpretar como una censura, ¿cierto? Pero es una manipulación de los datos, de la información, de la data, como dicen por ahí, y eso quiere decir de que la información veraz, fidedigna, que uno pensaría que espera obtener de un servicio, de una red como esa, pues de repente hay que, bueno, ojo, águila, alerta, porque no es tal cual, ¿eh? Los ex empleados dicen que no es cierto, la información no siempre es lo que parece ser. Entonces, acá no hay nada de eso. Lo que tú escuchas es lo que es. Hacemos todo lo posible por conseguir hacer alianzas con agencias de noticias, con medios de comunicación alternativos, con periodistas genuinos, honestos, sinceros, que facilitan sus reportes para que este programa pueda hacer un programa de noticias todos los días sin tener que invertir una enorme cantidad de dinero. Todo lo hacemos a trabajo a nivel de voluntario, nadie es asalariado, a nadie le pagan acá. Los reporteros que colaboran están haciendo donación con su trabajo para el Informativo Pacífica. En fin, es un esfuerzo colectivo de gente de muchos países que hacen posible el Informativo Pacífica. Nosotros meramente somos los que estamos coordinando la información, estamos recabándola, estamos dándole, poniéndola en orden antes de que salga al aire, haciendo la presentación, pues. Pero la información tiene muchas fuentes, tiene muchos contribuyentes, tienes muchas personas que colaboran, colaboradores, y todo para que tú que nos escuchas en ese momento tengas información de alternativa. Lo hacemos todos los días con mucho cariño, con mucho esmero, tratando que sea uno de los mejores programas de la radio en Los Ángeles, en el sur de California, y por qué no en el estado de California, porque realmente no es muy difícil ser mejor, ya que no hay mucha competencia, ¿cierto? 818-985-5735, son 20 después de las 9, escasos 8 minutos que nos quedan para estar en el aire, suficientes para que nos llames en este momento y las personas que están ahorita contestando los teléfonos tengan la buena fortuna de escuchar tu voz. 818-985-5735. Recuerda, una donación mínima de $25 no solamente te hace acreedor, te hace te da la membresía para que puedas votar en las elecciones de la mesa directiva local de esta emisora, sino que también te puedes llevar dos boletos para el Festival de Música Oaxaqueña que se está organizando como recaudación de fondos de la radio KPFK el sábado 28 de mayo, donde habrá danza, donde habrá músicos, poetas, artesanías, comida, bebidas tradicionales, muchísima música desde las 3 de la tarde hasta las 12 de la medianoche. Todo un fantango, todo un reventón, todo un guateque, todo un bochinche, una gran fiesta. Así que invita a tus vecinos, a tus compañeros de trabajo, a tus compañeros de escuela, a tus familiares, en que se vaya toda la familia a divertir, un día saludable, un día para que puedas conocer a otras gentes que escuchan la KPFK, gente que tiene mucho en común contigo, etcétera, ¿no? 818-985-5735. Ciertamente, esta es una estación de radio que es una isla, una voz en el desierto, como dijera el Juan el Bautista, ¿no? Porque en medio de ese círculo, de ese enorme grupo de medios de comunicación poderosos, de radio y televisión, de videos, de películas que nos rodean, que nos están casi asfixiando con tanta información o propaganda o tergiversación de la misma. Entonces, nosotros acá estamos con una vocecita mucha gente no conoce el hecho de que tenemos 112.000 vatios de potencia, que nuestra señal cubre la mitad del sur de California, la mitad del estado de California, y que es posible, si nosotros pasamos la voz, si nosotros promovemos, hacemos publicidad, le compartimos la información a la gente, le decimos que en el 90.7 FM se escucha este tipo de programación, de que pueda crecer la audiencia de una manera exponencial, de manera de que si logramos tener un mínimo de medio millón de radio oyentes, pues la donación pudiera ser de $5 por persona, ¿cierto? Y con eso nosotros pudiéramos solventar todos los gastos de la emisora. Probablemente no tendríamos que interrumpir la programación regular para pedir dinero periódicamente como lo hacemos, porque ya ese grupo base que se comprometiera a cada quien a hacer su responsabilidad, su parte de financiar este medio independiente, todos pudiéramos tener información alternativa acá en el sur de California. Y claro, aquellas personas que están en el internet, que están escuchando a través de www.kpfk.org, que nos puedan escuchar, como de hecho ya nos hacen a veces, nos hablan de Atlanta, Georgia, de Miami, Florida, de Washington, de Nueva York, de Madison, Wisconsin, lugares donde, inclusive donde no sale el informativo Pacífica, porque no sale en todos los países de América Latina, ¿cierto? O sea, se escucha en algunas regiones de México, de Colombia, de Venezuela, de Uruguay, de Argentina y Puerto Rico, pero hay otros países donde no se escucha. Sin embargo, allí se, no se escucha a través de una radio tradicional como esta, una radio donde que estaba fuera y dentro del internet, sino que se escucha en unas regiones del país. Allí de repente nos llaman por teléfono, nos mandan un correo electrónico para darnos un elogio, para darnos una felicitación, para darnos un comentario sobre el programa, porque hay otros países de América Latina y el Caribe donde nos están escuchando también. Todo eso es posible, que esta información fluya, información alternativa fluya por tantas regiones del continente gracias a tus donaciones, pues. Entonces, no hay que olvidar, no hay que perder la perspectiva del cuadro completo, de que lo que estamos haciendo acá tiene un impacto, así como CNN tiene un impacto mundial, así como la BBC, así como Telemundo, así como Univision, así como la prensa asociada, cadenas noticiosas, tiene un impacto regional y global. También el informativo Pacífica se transmite en 6 países de América Latina y el Caribe de manera regular. O sea que nuestra información alternativa está llegando a otros oídos, a otros corazones, a otros pueblos. Entonces, no olvidemos eso. Somos parte de un colectivo mundial, internacional, que busca lo que todos queremos. Tener un mundo más positivo, más civilizado, mejor, donde no haya necesidad de hacer guerras, donde no haya necesidad de robar a nadie para poder sobrevivir, ¿entiende? 818-985-5735 es el número de llamar. Nos quedan escasos 3 minutos suficientes para que nos llamen un mínimo de 10 personas más. Estamos apelando a los radioyentes del área de Riverside, de San Bernardino, del Inland Empire, como le dicen por ahí, a todas esas ciudades que están alrededor en el espacio territorial entre San Bernardino y Los Ángeles, a todos ellos que nos escuchan, gente de Santana, de San Diego, de Santa Bárbara y Ventura, de Long Beach, de Huntington Park, y los de acá del norte de Hollywood, que se reporten llamando al 818-985-5735, con ese espíritu increíblemente alegrato que tienen los folcloristas ahí en la música de fondo, con esa flautita indígena mexicana, en ese gran espíritu indigenista internacionalista que tiene el grupo mexicano de los folcloristas. Con ese espíritu vamos trabajando, pues. 818-985-5735, 818-985-5735, 818-985-5735. Fíjate nomás, aquí nos acaba de llegar un papel de que José Hernández acaba de dar una generosa donación desde la ciudad de Bakersfield, California. Fíjate, desde allá está este compañero haciendo lo posible, asegurándose de que este medio de comunicación alternativo va a continuar operando en el sur de California y a través del internet por todas las regiones del globo donde tengan acceso a una computadora conectada a la red, ¿cierto? 818-985-5735. Nos queda un minuto y medio. La porción que escucharon del día de hoy no es todo, por supuesto. Son 28 minutos de duración. Hay otros reportes que todavía están ahí guardados para ti. Si quieres visitar Radio KPFK en los archivos de audio, www.kpfk.org. Un minuto nos queda. 818-985-5735. ¿Dónde está San Diego? ¿Dónde está Santa Bárbara? ¿Dónde estás Huntington Park? ¿Dónde está Southgate? ¿Dónde está Bell Gardens. Queremos que toda la familia de Pacífica dé un paso al frente, marque el número. Si no tienes la plata, el dinero, la guita en el momento, no es tan importante como que tengas la predilección, la disposición. Llámanos al 818-985-5735. Nosotros te enviamos la cuenta por correo. Cuando la recibas, nos mandas cheque money order. Esa es una forma. Puedes hacer una tarjeta de crédito. Puedes pagar en partes. Puedes hacer una donación de $100, $5 al mes, por ejemplo, $10 al mes, etcétera. Hay muchas formas. Si quieres ayudar, las personas, hombres y mujeres que te van a contestar al teléfono, ellos te van a decir, explicar todas las diferentes formas, así como los diferentes regalos que tenemos. Camisetas, películas, playeras, bolsas, libros, películas, etcétera. 818-985-5735. Federico García está en nuestros controles, le queremos agradecer con todo cariño a ustedes que nos están ayudando, llamando al teléfono ahorita para apoyar la KPFK. Muchas gracias de todo corazón, a nombre de Toshli y de Norma Martínez. Se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Que pase muy buena noche, hasta la próxima.
Si el pueblo van bajando la montaña porque es primero de enero, llevan gallinas al cura.
¿Deseas apoyar a los programas en español de KPFK? Pues ahora es el momento. Tenemos horarios disponibles de 9 a 12 de la noche. Mándame un correo electrónico con tu disponibilidad a José Benavides, JBENAVIDES @kpfk.org. JBENAVIDES @kpfk.org. Necesitaremos tu apoyo contestando las líneas telefónicas. Nos vemos aquí.
KPFK is in serious need of volunteers to answer phones during our current fund drive. Please, you're welcome to come on down anytime between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. to help answer phones from our listener supporters who are calling in to make pledges during our current fund drive. We are located at 3729 Cohanga Boulevard West. Off the 101 freeway, you can exit Lankershim Boulevard, or we are walking distance from the Metro Red Line Universal City Station. Again, that's 3729 Cohanga Boulevard West. Call 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK for more information.
Hey, cats and kittens, chicks and Charlies, this is James Elroy, the demon dog of American literature, baying at you from KPFK. It's radio powered by the people, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, we're broadcasting at 101.3 FM and streaming at freakradio.org. Or perhaps you were archived on the Huff website. Maybe you're listening to us there. That's huffsantacruz.org under the name Bathrobespierre's Broadsides. It's the May 12th, 2016 show, and we've got lots of stuff coming up. We have some preliminary coverage of the Vanish the Vendors law at City Council 2 days ago. We have a bit from Freedom Sleep Out 44, which happened after. We have an interview which I'd overlooked, but I'm going to be playing with attorney Mark Maron of Sacramento about the situation there, and numerous interviews from the Red Church, that's the Monday Meal, which has become increasingly, restrictive toward homeless people, with a guard at the door stopping people from taking their food outside, sort of reminiscent of Officer Azua pulling his gun on Jasmine and her mother several years ago at the Salvation Army Thanksgiving meal. Rather notorious situation, which, as far as I know, Azua has never had to, never been held accountable at any particular point. Also, at the Red Church, you get little red tickets, and if they're more than 75 people, folks, have, at least in the past, have been turned away. Still, I was there on Monday. The food is tasty. The folks serving it are friendly. I make my usual announcements about protests coming up often the next day at City Hall on Tuesday, every other Tuesday of the month, second and fourth. And elsewhere where there are stirrings of the possibility of mutiny against the existing system of oppression in Santa Cruz against homeless people. So all those things are coming up, plus some more bits and pieces and stories from here and there. No call-ins because we're still without a studio in place, though we have, we are negotiating for one and are hoping to sign a lease for one or an agreement and then move in within the next few weeks. It's a makeshift studio. We don't know how long we can stay there or how long it's going to work, but that is the plan, and it seems signs look very positive, which means we may soon have a phone line. The downside is that there is a transmitter problem, which there has been for 2 or 3 years. The generous patron who has allowed us to place a transmitter on his property has been under siege by the banks on a foreclosure situation, and that may be coming to a head in this summer in July. The person has taken it to court again and again and been able to fend off the foreclosure or fend off some aspect of the foreclosure. I'm not clear with all the peculiar details. But that may not be what happens in July. So we're looking for a place to set up a transmitter as well as a backup for the studio in case this particular location doesn't work. We're hoping it will, though. But the transmitter site is even more problematic, and that will mean we'll go off the air in July or whenever the plug is pulled. We need a place to put up an antenna and put up a small box and shack. The shack is like, you know, pretty minuscule, I don't know, 3x5 or something. And we need access to electricity. I think that's what the story is. If you want more information or if you have any ideas, give a call to 831-423-4833 and let me know what your thoughts are or your questions are. Also, with respect to this show, if you've got some input on what you've heard or perhaps you think there are some issues that aren't being covered that are relevant to poverty situation in Santa Cruz and those outside, also covering the latest attack crackdown on cannabis, which is happening, it also happened at the Board of Supervisors 2 days ago. Do give a call, 423-4833, or you can shoot me an email at rnorse3, R-N-O-R-S-E, rnorse, the number 3, at hotmail.com. And now, let's get into Bathrobe Spears Broadsides and on with the show.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you.
So let's begin with some of the interviews I did a few days ago at the Red Church. You'll actually hear me giving sort of an announcement about the next day's arrival of the Vanish the Vendors Law, which passed handily and unanimously at City Council for a first reading. All laws in Santa Cruz, unless they're emergency ordinances, which is rare, have to go through two readings, two passages before the essentially rubber-stamping City Council. There is no real process in the city for vetting these laws with real public hearings. The public gets a chance to do a few squeaks during the 2 minutes allowed by Mayor Two-Minute Matthews, whom I call 2 minutes because the prior time was 3 minutes, which wasn't much better, but I guess it was 50% better. She has cut down the time to 2 minutes, and also normally the five-minute allowance given to groups has been cut down to 3 minutes. That's what where I was speaking Tuesday at City Council on behalf of HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with that meets every Wednesday at 11 o'clock at the Sub Rosa with free coffee. Come on in. So you'll hear me chatting away or booming away about the upcoming City Council meeting, and then you'll hear some other voices, believe it or not, at the Red Church, which I've talked about already a bit. That's the church at Calvary Episcopal Church at Cedar and Lincoln Streets, across from Jack's Hamburgers and Cynthia Matthews' historic home. It's not where she lives. It's a historic building between the Nickelodeon and the Jack's Hamburgers that she rents out to, presumably rents out, but she's the owner. And the reason I mention this is because some years ago she was engaged in a controversy with then-pastor Joel Miller, who had a somewhat more extensive homeless program under Renee Curry, who was the groundskeeper and allowed homeless youth to show up more frequently on the grounds. Now they have a policy of no sitting on the grass, even during the meal, even before the meal, and any other times as well. If you're on the grass, they're likely to drive you away, even though this is the largest piece of property in the downtown area that's open space that I'm aware of. This Calvary Episcopal Church complex and the parking lot next to it. So let's listen in.
Announcement, everybody. This is an unpaid announcement. I'm not part of the church, but there is tomorrow at City Council one of their meetings. The City Council is meeting again. And they're planning to change the laws and make it harsher for street performers, people on Pacific Avenue, and everybody there, particularly vendors. They're going to try to eliminate all jewelry vendors. This is going to come up in the afternoon in case you want to come and say anything about this. I don't know how many people here are involved on Pacific Avenue, but it impacts all of us because it's our scene. And that's going to happen probably around 3:30, 4:00. At 5 o'clock, there's what they call oral communications, which allows people to speak on anything they want. So if you want to talk about police harassment, you want to talk about lack of shelter, you want to talk about any kind of thing that's come up, not that they will listen, mind you, because they don't, they will nod at you. But the point is, the TV cameras put it out to the community, and some people out there may hear it. Again, that's tomorrow at City Hall. Also tomorrow is the Freedom Sleep Out 44. That's when homeless folks and their allies, some of them, are on the sidewalk sleeping throughout the night. And some of you know exactly what that's all about. And that is very easy to, well, I don't know how easy it is. The weather is getting warmer. But that happens usually. Food Not Bombs will be there serving food, and it's happening tomorrow night. So, thought I'd mention it. Also, I'm going to be wandering around doing interviews. So, I'll play those on free radio. If you want to talk to me, you can. If you don't, don't. Thank you.
I really don't want to talk.
No report. Just to say,
why are you so close? I've known food out there. One meal, and that's it.
And you're a guy who lives in this vehicle, and you know that.
Yeah, that's like everybody's getting thin, skinny.
You're looking thinner.
Yeah, I am. and everybody's turning to you-know-what, replace the food.
They mean the intoxicants of some kind?
Some sort or another, but anyway.
Do you wish to stay yours, or shall we keep it a secret?
No, not me. I'm trying to survive.
Fair enough.
Harder all the time.
Thank you. Any street reports?
Quiet.
So we have, we're talking with
Julie Shaw, Santa Cruz Safe Parking, RV Parking Rights, and Santa Cruz Full-Timers on Facebook.
So in spite of the legislation last year to make it illegal for RVs to be parking anywhere in the city without a permit during the day, and I guess, no, it's at night, not during the day, and also requiring, you know, changing the whole spacing. That hasn't happened and impacted you.
They did want to do the oversized ordinance during the day, but apparently what I understand is that the Coastal Commission told the City Council that they couldn't go ahead with the oversized ordinance, vehicle ordinance, at this time. I think they're doing more research on that. I don't know the details on that. There's been a big shakeup as far as management is concerned at the Coastal Commission.
Yeah, I saw that. Unfortunately, the Coastal Commission's gone in the wrong direction, but maybe it will stand tough on this one.
And apparently, I overheard somebody saying that there was many cities, like maybe up to 60 cities, who were able to pass that oversized ordinance, and that Rochelle Neroyan was very upset because they weren't able to pass that in Santa Cruz. So I'm very intrigued to learn more about that situation.
Rochelle Neroyan, previously head of the Transportation Public Works Commission, has graduated or descended onto the City Council, where she has been a generally horrible voice on civil rights for poor people issues, one of which, of course, is the right to live in a vehicle as the only affordable housing that is possible, provided you aren't littering or causing a problem. And that, of course, is now, and actually I believe it was, there's now a permit required if you want to park your vehicle and live in it during the night, anywhere after 6 o'clock to 6 in the morning. And I don't know that that was overruled by the Coastal Commission, although Julie might be more in touch with it than I am. I believe that was passed last year, although my memory may not be faulty or it may be incomplete. It may have been stuff that's happened since. There was a second ordinance having to do with oversized parking spaces where they decided they'll make sure these vehicles don't park by cutting down the parking spaces to, compact car size or some such thing, and making it illegal to use two parking spaces even if you pay for the meter or you respect the time limits. And that, I believe, was the ordinance that got stalled by a fear about the Coastal Commission's veto, which may be less likely because the Coastal Commission had a coup where the previously environmentally sensitive chair was ousted in favor of some corporate hack, or at least that's how it was described by critics. Let's hear some more from the Red Church. Actually, these are interviews in line while waiting for food.
Talk more.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We've been talking with
Julie Shaw.
Thanks, Julie. All right. Any street reports?
All right.
Yourself?
It's a bad day. Yeah, it's nice place to.
You got good food, or it looks good. Any reports from the street?
Not really. I've been out of town. Something like, actually, I've been away for a year and a half, so I'm kind of seeing what's going on now.
So, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you.
So you're a man with a guitar, and you're concerned about what they're planning to do to vendors.
Mm-hmm.
What's your name?
Jennifer.
And Jennifer, what bothers you about this upcoming ordinance that would make it illegal to sell jewelry or give away jewelry or display jewelry or anything that isn't like written or audio that you've created?
I think it goes against the right to free speech, because for the artist, our artwork is our speech, and people should be able to sell their artwork in any kind of public place.
I agree with you. We've been talking with
Jennifer.
Thanks, Jennifer. Go ahead. This is free radio. Do you want to say something for free radio?
Ever since I've been born.
And before we hear the next speaker, let me review for all you listeners out there what this law passed by the City Council on Tuesday, the day after this particular recording was made, actually bans on Pacific Avenue, also on the Wharf and on the Beach Street and a few other areas as well. It bans the use of a table or any kind of what's called a display device, that is to say a stand capable of holding tangible things. So that could be a guitar case, soliciting donations. It could be a cup for a panhandler. You're only going to be allowed to use these display devices within the blue boxes. That is to say, the marked areas. You may walk down Pacific Avenue and see that there have been newly designated, or actually perhaps intensified, blue marks that are... There are four of them at the four corners of areas that are usually, I think it's 2 by 3 squares on the street, on the sidewalk, I should say. And some people are respecting this, some are not. Haven't heard of police as yet going after folks, although that is still, that's currently the law. You have to be inside the blue boxes for your... If you have anything you have set upon a table or other item capable of holding tangible things, but it will be illegal to have any of the following things, items that, this is the criteria they're using, the basis from which they'll decide whether you can have an item on your display device table inside the blue box only for 1 hour, and then you have to move along for 24 hours to about 100 feet away if you can find one inside another blue box. Items that have more than nominal utility apart from their communication are banned. So if you know it's normally an item used for something else, but it also communicates a message, maybe it has a peace sign on it. The ban includes, but is not limited to, food, housewares, appliances, articles of clothing, hats, scarves, sunglasses, auto parts, oils, incense, perfume, crystals, rocks, geodes, lotions, candles, jewelry, jewelry holders, toys, stuffed animals, glass and metal pipes, and any vaping device. Now, I was not present for the entire presentation of Scott Collins at City Council, who presented the staff's report on this item, this law that they then subsequently passed the day before yesterday. So I can't be sure of this, but when I asked activist Tom Noddy, a street performer, a supporter, and a person following this item pretty closely, and you've heard him and I talk about it at length in past shows, or at least one past show, he told me that no time did they read this list of items that are banned. Now, they did have a sort of a PowerPoint presentation, which I'm hoping to review online, because there is an audio and video record made of City Council meetings, or at least part of them, until the mayor turns off the cameras, which he can order done when she recesses or stops the council meeting for any reason. But that hasn't showed up yet, and I'm still waiting to find that, which is under the audio and video link if you go to the Santa Cruz City Council website, if you'd like to listen to that. So the reason that's significant that this ban on all these particulars was not mentioned was because it really gives you an idea when I read this, you know, the food, housewares, appliances, articles of clothing, hats, scarves, sunglasses, auto parts, oil, incense, perfume, crystals, rocks, geodes, lotions, candles, jewelry, jewelry holders, toys, stuffed animals, glass and metal pipes, and any vaping device. That a lot of stuff is being banned completely from being shown on Pacific Avenue. And even inside the very limited spaces of the blue boxes. And you can display them, I guess, if you're giving them away, but they're called commercial vending. If you sell, offer for sale, I'm reading the law, expose or display for sale, solicit offers to purchase or to barter food, goods, merchandise, or services in any area from a stand, table, pushcart, motor vehicle, bicycle, or by a person with or without the use of any other device, or to require someone to pay a fee or to set, negotiate, or establish a fee before providing food, goods, merchandise, or services, even if characterized by the vendor as a donation. This practice of providing free of charge an item which may not be vended in exchange for the purchaser purchasing an item which may be vended as an item for receiving the free item. So that would also be illegal if you provide an item that can't be vended in exchange for another item that can be. They're really trying to make sure that no one, and often these are poverty-level people who are doing this, provides anything that might in any way annoy the jeweler brick-and-mortar shops, as they call them, on Pacific Avenue that pay exorbitant rents, I would add, for sure, but now want to take out their frustrations on the poorer people on the sidewalks, which, of course, is outrageous. There's also a ban on performances, and the ban on performances, find it here, includes the application of substances to others' bodies, including but not limited to paints, dyes, and inks. So don't try any face painting on Pacific Avenue for a donation or as at a cost. Don't try the provision of personal services such as massage, hair weaving, cutting, or styling. The completion or other partial creation of visual art, i.e. don't paint on Pacific Avenue, and don't try to sketch people for a donation. That's going to be illegal too. That's obviously art, and that's going to be a real problem if someone has the cojones or ovaries to challenge that in court or to stand up to it and wait for the city to try to challenge it further than its pet courts that it, you know, can send stuff to and get rubber stamps on, but although not always. And then it gets taken to a higher court or a federal court. And also the creation of visual art, which is mass-produced or produced with limited variation, would be eliminated. So, for instance, something that I gave a donation for on Pacific Avenue yesterday, a woman for the first time selling her photos, and there was multiple copies of the photos, would probably be banned under this, I'm guessing, because it's really an uncertain criteria. The law is, even though it tries to be very specific, it is overbroad, and it's also still vague. Those are two categories used by the courts at different times in the past to overturn laws that try to ban certain kinds of behavior or sales of items and so forth. Particularly behavior, though, is what I'm thinking of. And finally, banned is the creation of handcrafts, such as weaving, carving, stitching, sewing, lacing, and beading objects, such as jewelry, pottery, silverwork, leather goods, and trinkets. So you can't even create these items inside the blue boxes on Pacific Avenue. And of course, anything outside the blue boxes is illegal. And the performance ban doesn't involve display devices, I believe. So that's a commercial vending ban. And the commercial vending ban, I believe, also bans, as you heard, not if you are engaging in vending of any kind, even without a display device. So they are expanding very seriously the restrictions. If you're holding the stuff in your hand, it's still illegal. If you are sitting in on a chair with no table inside a blue box sewing, that's illegal. I mean, this is such an obvious restriction on public activity and public, they call it now performance. And that's an interesting aspect of this law that has not been discussed. And perhaps if I have it together in 2 weeks when this matter comes back to City Council, I may be there to mention it. Not so much of the council, which couldn't give a shit and, you know, follows the staff along like the tail follows the dog. Scott Collins and Julie Hendy, these two staff members who created this abortion. But rather to the community, because it goes out on community TV. And this is an aspect of the law that I hadn't noticed before, that performances are being banned, which have nothing to do with display devices, not to mention, of course, all these other items. Now, to be fair, it should be said that there are some things that are allowed. So the things that are exempted from the ban are Traditional expressive speech, I'm quoting from the law, and petitioning activities and distribution of the following expressive items: newspapers, leaflets, pamphlets, bumper stickers, patches, and or buttons. Also, items which have been created, written, or composed by the vendor or performer, such as books, audio, video, or other recordings of their performances, paintings, photographs, or print and prints. So I may have to correct myself and say that what I did purchase yesterday may still be allowed, because it may not be considered something that was mass-produced or produced with limited variation. It's not clear. And actually, that has to do with performances. So the behavior, you can't come onto Pacific Avenue and do any body painting or tattooing. You can't do any hair weaving or cutting or styling. You can't create any paintings. You can't start mass creating anything that's mass produced or produced with limited variation. That's kind of obscure, but that's what I was mentioning before. And you can't create handcrafts or handicrafts, such as weaving, carving, stitching, sewing, lacing, and beading objects, such as jewelry, pottery, silverwork, leather goods, and trinkets. So you can't create these things, which to me seems a really pretty blatant infringement on not just traditional freedom of expression on Pacific Avenue, but constitutionally protected freedom of expression in any city. Although I'm sure that many cities require permits to sell things, I'm not aware of cities that require permits to sew. So if you stand on the sidewalk doing some sewing and a cop comes and says, "Okay, buddy, that's illegal, I'm taking you to jail," or "Stop that or I'll give you a $250 ticket, that seems to me to be a very peculiar and atypical reaction to that kind of behavior in any city. Not just get rid of the homeless Santa Cruz, because that's really what this is about. It is, although they're claiming it's against vendors, and the complaints have been against vendors, the original impetus for all these downtown ordinances was to get rid of poor people like who were panhandling and just hanging out. They found them, or feared they were, a distraction to business. And that really, to me, they're attempting to break up, isolate, and dissipate the street culture in Santa Cruz. That's really what's going on here. And they have been successful to some extent in getting certain groups to sort of stand back from all this and say, "Well, don't go after us, the street performers. We're the good guys. The rest of those folks, you know, oh yeah, those bums, those panhandlers, those homeless folks hanging out, those bad, and there's some bad performers too. We'll try to take care of them with, our own voluntary street performers guidelines." Which actually are not a bad way to go for the issue, and I propose them for dealing with all kinds of issues on Pacific Avenue. But the idea of turning people against each other, turning groups against each other, is, I think, if not consciously pursued, it's a strategy that has been seeming to be happening. Maybe it's an unintended consequence. It lets people think, "Well, I'm better than those other people, so I have a right to be here, but they don't." That kind of thing is a way of destroying rights for everyone. And, you know, I think it's used successfully by governments in saying, in getting nonprofits to compete against each other, in getting folks to fight each other on the basis of identity politics. You know, I'm a woman, therefore this. I'm a African-American, therefore this. Instead of we're all in the situation. Yes, we do face special discriminatory practices because of our gender, or because of our skin color, or because of our Native American origin, or, you know, because of our language, whatever. But that doesn't... We all face a common enemy, which has to do with essentially wealthy people whose whole machine of operation is based on the existing system of wage slavery and rent slavery, and people essentially working their fingers to the bone so that a very much smaller number of people can have a very, very good life. Let's take a, I was going to take a musical break here, but let me see if I finish this. I wanted to, I know, in all fairness to the creators of this ordinance, I want to state that the, I mentioned what the allowed, the exemptions are for having on your, you know, for commercial vending. You're also, the other exemptions for performances that are playing musical instruments, singing, dancing, acting, pantomiming, puppeteering, juggling, reciting, engaging in music, creating visual art in its entirety, presenting or enacting a play or work of music, physical or mental feat, or other constitutionally protected entertainment or form of expression. So if you, I guess if you completely finish a painting on Pacific Avenue, that's okay. But if you're partially doing it, that's illegal. How you can get to one without going through the other, it's a little obscure to me. Because again, band is the completion of or other partial creation of visual art. That is pretty specific. And yet at the same time, it's legal to create visual art in its entirety. So that may mean sketch artists are okay if they complete their sketch. But while in the process of doing the sketch, or if they stop from the sketch, or if they're doing some painting that requires painting for a bit and then coming back later, that's a ban. And of course, you can only do this within the sacred blue boxes, of which the number has now been cut back to initially. Now it's about, I was told it's about 25. I haven't counted the boxes lately. There were supposed to be 63 spaces, according to Julie Hendy and Scott Collins. I believe they're the ones who presented this back in 2013 when there were very restrictive setbacks proposed. That is to say, forbidden zones. They didn't have blue boxes at that point, but they said, well, there's still 63 places where you can do all kinds of things, even if you have to be 14 feet from a building, 14 feet from an intersection, 14 feet from a phone booth, 14 feet from a bench, 14 feet from a trash compactor, 14 feet from a trash can, 14 feet from a sidewalk cafe, 14 feet from a kiosk, and so forth. There's still 63 spaces. Now, of course, there are going to be only 30 spaces, which that will be coming up at the next city council meeting when the actual resolution will pass specifying the location and number of the spaces. I'll be talking more about this issue on in our next edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. That's going to be, I believe, on Sunday the 15th, or possibly next week on the 19th on Thursday evening, because at that point I'll have access to some of the audio and video, I hope, that the City Council staff will post online. And so will you if you want to hear it and see it, because it'll be both presumably audio, a file, and a video file. So, let's take a musical break and then come back with more from the Red Church last Monday.
This is Wednesday, March 27th, 1940. Department of Interior, Woody Guthrie, recorded, and Elizabeth Lomax. Woody, you were telling me about the dust storm in the northern part of Texas. Can you tell me something about these people, how they reacted to these storms, and how the wives, what the wives and kids were doing, and what sort of houses they lived in, so on?
Well, in all the oil field booms that I've chased and followed, there's one thing that is true of almost all of the oil fields, especially the ones that broke out on the West Texas plains. An oil boom is a thing that comes and it lasts for a little while and then it dies down again. And so nobody wants to build a really and truly a permanent living quarters there, they just sort of build up some kind of a little old shack, house to live in, just something to get in out of the weather. And when all of this dust started blowing up in the Texas oil fields, why, these people's houses wasn't built to keep out all this dust. So every morning when you'd wake up, why, you'd see where the dust had drifted in through the cracks in your house, and it just lit all over the floor and made ripples and drifts all over the floor of your house, and wherever the drafts of air went from one crack through all the rooms of your house, why, when you woke up in the morning, there'd just be a big drift of dust in your house, and your hair and your eyes and your whole face that stuck out from under the cover would be just covered up with dust, and all of the combs and brushes and things on your dresser would be covered up with dust. And breathing that dust, naturally, there was lots of people took down with a sickness that was called the dust pneumonia.
Well, have you got any songs about this dust pneumonia?
Yeah, I got one here. I've got that dust pneumonia. Pneumonia in my lungs. Got the dust pneumonia, pneumonia in my lungs, and it won't be long till I'll be dead and gone. I got that dust pneumonia, dust got in my lungs. I got the dust pneumonia, and the dust got in my lungs. Doctor told me, boy, it won't be long.
And there's a longer version of the song, much longer. On a line at YouTube, go to the Best of Woody Guthrie, and you'll be able to hear that one directly. So I don't need to play it here. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org, on the computer and the Internet. And we're also archived on the Huff website at huffsantacruz.org. That's H-U-F-F-S-A-N-T-A-C-R-U-Z, all one word, .org. Let's hear some more from the voices of folks on or close to the streets, standing in the food line at the Red Church, or thereabouts.
I've been hearing pure talk. You're going to do this, you're going to do that, and nothing ever get done. No, the work has never been finished. What happened? Guys got to wake up.
You're right.
Yeah.
Thank you. You're welcome.
We've been talking with Roxroy Houghton, Jamaica, West Indies.
Thank you, man. Now, Robert, you were saying?
Said I was out. I had my bedding taken by the Rangers in the park.
How long ago?
Friday, 3 days ago. And so cold kind of gets to my bones. I'm a little sensitive.
Were you there when they took?
I had a sore, achy back today, and I was laying on the.
Were you there when they took your bedding?
Yeah, kind of, but not really.
Sorry?
I was there, but they didn't know.
No? Okay, you were hiding out. Fair enough. And we've been talking with you?
But I was on the bench at the library, laying on it, putting my back in the sun, and security guard came up and informed me that I could not lie upon the public library bench.
What? Really?
Yeah. My back was sore, it was cold, and I said, God, I almost was going to tell him, call the police to come and give me a ticket, because I thought that was very, excessive.
It sounds like a bunch of horseshit.
Thank you, Robert. Any reports from the street?
And three comments about that report by Robert. First of all, apparently it was noted at the city council meeting, although I don't think I heard it, and then I think in the staff report for the Vanish the Vendors Law, as I guess my shorthand for their latest changes that they passed unanimously on Tuesday, and that will be coming up again on Tuesday the 24th, and then go into effect a month later, probably June 24th or June 23rd. Parks and Rec Rangers will be taking over the patrolling of Pacific Avenue, which can have quite an implication because Parks and Rec, which has the power within the space it patrols to not just give expensive and absurd and abusive citations, tickets, but they also can ban people from that area for 24 hours, a week, a month, 6 months, and so forth, based upon whether they've been there before and have been violating an ordinance. So it's a way of really clearing out poor people from the downtown area. And it will impact not just the vendors. It will impact anybody who's homeless, who police decide are violating one of the many ordinances that have been passed, making it illegal to sit, panhandle, table, and so forth, and heavily restrict is probably the word. None of these activities are completely banned. They're just banned in about like 98% of the space there. I'd say even more, and that's going to be a significant impact. There'll be an immediate stay-away order, which isn't the kind of thing you get from a court after a conviction. It happens on the say-so of a police officer, in this case, I'm sorry, a ranger. I'm not sure if... I think police officers can do it, too, but they don't usually patrol... they do patrol Pacific Avenue, and they do give out citations there. But it's rangers who have been most regular and notorious for doing this. That's what we found when I examined... That's what I found when I looked over the tickets rangers gave in the last year. Almost every single citation in a park, most of them for sleeping or being in the park after hours or smoking in the park, were included. Included with them was a stay-away order for a day or for a longer period of time, usually for a day. That's one effect. The idea that lying on a bench is criminal behavior is a overbroad expansion of the long-standing ordinance, which actually predates the 1994 downtown ordinances about sitting and panhandling and so forth, that it is illegal to use any public property for a purpose for which it was not intended, customarily used, or designed. And that law may have been slightly altered in recent years to make it even worse, but that law was used to, could be used to go after someone lying on a bench, claiming, you're not supposed to lie down on a bench, you're supposed to sit on a bench. Of course, that's nonsense. You can lie on a bench, provided no one else needs the space. Admittedly, it may make it more difficult for a person walking along to say, excuse me, can you move your butt so I can... or move your head, or move your body so I can sit there. But still, that at the times when people are lying on benches, often there is nobody else around except for the security guards who have been assigned to patrol at all hours of the day and night in search of this kind of crime. That's, of course, the crime, of course, are the patrols, not the behavior they're supposedly patrolling for. And, of course, the seizure of property, although it sounds like he was hiding from the police and they took his property as unattended, this idea of taking unattended property, which is being expanded so that if you are leaving a friend to attend the property while you go to seek out a bathroom, and the bathrooms are disappearing all over town, or at least the traditional, the visitor's bathroom at Cafe Gratitude, which is right next to Total Fitness on Lincoln Street near Pacific, is now gone, and there's a sign on the window that says no public bathrooms. Visitors' bathrooms used to be bathrooms funded by the city, and now they are no longer funded. And Pamela Comstock's superficially brave activity in demanding that there be public 24-hour bathrooms established, even over the machinations of the staff last summer, that attempted to twice circumvent a unanimous city council resolution mandating two pilot programs for bathrooms. She's done nothing when only one was opened, and that one was closed in December. That's the Soquel Avenue garage bathroom at Soquel and Front Street. So, I think there was a third point I had, but let's leave it at that and listen to some more.
No, sir.
All right. Street reports? Hey, Joey, any street reports?
Yeah, the police department has stole my Direct Express card for the third time.
When was that?
Saturday.
And what was the situation?
They told me to leave, and I went back there 3 minutes later, and my card sprout legs and walked away.
Now, where was this?
In the parking garage, right down from the library.
And who told you? Remember, it was the one cop, 15 cops,
parking wreck. It was the one who has the hair sleeves. The female.
Light blue.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I had to wait and order another car, and I can't leave until next Friday now.
And 2 points. Of course, he's talking about the parking garages, where it's become illegal to sit, read a book, even in your own legally parked vehicle, and also all city-funded parking lots, all city-designated parking lots that aren't private property. It's also illegal to socialize in them, sit in them, stand in them, unless you're walking directly through or going parking or retrieving a vehicle within a 10-minute, a 15-minute period, half an hour if you're disabled. This really, again, extravagant expansion of a ban that essentially provides another blank check for selective enforcement to police is part of the whole anti-homeless series of ordinances that have been tried, probably at a very significant cost in terms of patrolling and court costs and police transportation costs and so forth. But this has never been researched by the city council at all. Light blue means a CSO. And this is Joey talking, who is an activist who's a regular participant in the Freedom Sleepers. And has also reported that he's regularly lost property thanks to the machinations of the police department. Which I often hear, by the way, being defended. Oh, it's their job, all that sort of thing. No, that's not their job. And even if it's the law that they're supposed to be enforcing, then they are in the wrong job business, and they need to be held accountable just as much as the legislators who are passing the laws. Similarly, the staff who are creating these laws defended my Micah Posner, council member at the last city council meeting. Oh, don't blame the police, it's, you know, for enforcing them. Don't blame the staff. Don't criticize them. We're the ones you know. He's fronting for the real power people who, in this case, the staff, and ultimately the power people, the police, who make the actual on-the-site choices as to who to cite and who not to cite.
We'll talk again. Have we been talking about
it? Joseph Earl Taylor III.
Thank you, Joseph. Any reports, Ray?
Ray, Chen, Goy.
Anything from the street?
Not really.
Thanks, man. Any reports?
Fellow brethren and sisters and that are most in need.
We don't want you poor people hanging around, man. Come on. So we're talking with
Tori.
And Tori, you were saying?
I was hitchhiking down the coast and the Harbor Police were all over Carmel.
the harbor police? And did they contact you?
They said, get the hell out of here. We're going to have you arrested.
For what crime?
Being out of my area, that I got augmented by a bank or something like that.
Well, you mean you had an interview? Explain that.
I'm not sure the process. The IRS can do it. They can audit you or augment your bank process, depending on whatever you're involved.
I don't know much about that either, yeah. But the cops told you to get out of town.
They basically said split, yeah.
Harbor Police of Carmel?
MP.
Yeah. Monterey.
You know, it should be said that although it can be a risky thing to do, not so risky when you're doing this with security guards, because they have no arrest powers unless you are actually committing a crime. And if you're pretty clear that you're not committing a crime, particularly if there are witnesses around or if you have some sort of video or audio device with you, you can simply tell a security guard to go mind their own business or call a police officer if they're concerned, which has been done, of course, at different occasions. But then the police often, this happens at the Freedom Sleepers quite regularly, security guards such as Chase, one of the main security guards who gets positive reviews from some and negative reviews from others, has called police, for example, for a man for not identifying himself when he was sleeping under the eaves of a building in the rain at the City Hall, which is frequently the case with the Freedom Sleepers. And I don't know if it was the case with this last Freedom Sleep Out Tuesday, but there were folks sleeping and it's illegal to sleep under the eave of a building at City Hall, meaning even if the building is closed, you're outside the building, you're just using the shelter of the passageway to get out of the rain, after 10 o'clock, that is a crime, because they've declared the area a closed park, again, to get rid of homeless people, and specifically to go after the 6 years ago was the Peace Camp 2010 protest. And now it's the Freedom Sleepers protest. Though police have recently just taken to telling people to move. And unless they don't move, not giving them citations, though they have the option to cite them. Often that's a futile process because they can't pay the citations. They don't show up in court. It's just another a meaningless beating of people who are already down. But that never stopped the authorities before. Because what you have is a machine. That's something a lot of people don't recognize. Oh, there are compassionate police officers. Yes, all individuals have a compassionate side. That's my belief. And they can be very compassionate in different occasions. But if the machine itself to which they owe their livelihood requires them not to be, then that becomes really the functioning reality, unless they wish to break with that. And that can take some courage, some strength, and some other resources. And it's unrealistic to expect that to happen or to praise, it's good to praise individual compassion by a police officer when it happens, but it's certainly wrong to say, as Michael Posner said, oh, don't blame the police, don't blame us, we pass the laws. It's part of his tendency, which I have a tendency to do too, which is to try to be friends with individuals who are part of a machine that is actually destroying people's liberty, their dignity, their very lives, because homeless people forced to sleep in the rain and not allowed to sleep at night die 20 years earlier than the rest of us. At least those are the stats I've seen. Let's hear more.
Something like that.
And we've been talking with
Tori.
Thanks. Should be on free radio Thursday night. Any three reports? Thanks. Hi. Three reports? Any kind?
Nothing much. Just wish there wasn't as much harassment where the police are concerned and myself getting picked up.
When was this?
About a week ago, if that. And then
that makes three people. This woman, Joey, and Robert, who have reported their stuff taken within the last week. I think Robert said it was last Friday. He had his sleeping gear taken. Joey said his card was taken a few days ago. And here's this woman talking about the police seizing property. Police, of course, will not release your property even if you're not guilty of a crime or it's not necessary for the court case, if that's what they want to do. This is a joke, of course, a very cruel and nasty joke that police use. And you have to be down at the police station, which is only open for these activities for picking up property, 12:30 to 2:30 on 2 days, Tuesday and Thursday. That's outrageous, of course. Why would that be the case? You know, when this police department is heavily funded by the city council, it's got a spanking, I was going to say spanking new, but it's not new anymore, indoor firing range. It's got Bearcats, armored vehicle tanks to batter down doors to serve search warrants, which is what these armored vehicles are used for, all this crap about officer safety talk, notwithstanding. And they can't afford to open their doors to people whose survival gear they are seizing and holding. If they pick you up or if they do so on a Thursday, you can't get it back till the next Tuesday. It's part of the whole either deliberate or oblivious approach to essentially making it unwelcome for poor people, and also showing a kind of a high-handed attitude that police have, where they can so casually and blithely ignore basic human needs and just common decency and a regular procedure on these matters. And I think the person to blame for this is Chief Vogel right now, if you want to email him at the City of Santa Cruz. kvogel@cityofsantacruz.org, I believe, is the email address. Of course, nothing wrong with doing that, but of course, what's really needed are the kind of massive Black Lives Matter type protests that are being done in San Francisco demanding the firing or resignation of Chief San Francisco Police Chief Sir after the murder of two unarmed people in the last 9 months up there. I think one of them homeless, maybe two of them homeless, but at least one of them. Let's hear more.
Well, I just was minding my own business, trying to move through somewhere. And
where was it?
16. Oh, at a plaza here in Santa Cruz. And, well, fire truck came first in the broad daylight, and it just seemed like I wasn't doing a lot. I was trying to move through. It returned something that was outside and I attended at the first time. Anyways, it was a shopping cart. That's all.
They took your shopping cart?
It was theirs.
And
I was trying to return it. And no. I was just trying to put it back on the property that I borrowed it from.
Did they just take the cart? Or did they take anything else?
No. I think they just didn't give me enough time to put it and then leave. And, yeah.
So they took the stuff in the cart as well?
They took my stuff and took me to jail. I felt illegally.
How long were you held in jail?
Well, I went to the psychiatric ward and then I got shot at the hospital. And getting in and out of the gurney, even allowing my to be able to go to the bathroom, it hurt my body physically because there's something going on more than meets the eye. And it's a spiritual thing, but I don't know how to talk about it.
Sometimes can be hard.
Yeah, it's really hard.
We've been talking about it. If you want to say who you are.
Yeah, I'm Cecilia. My name is Cecilia.
Cecilia, thanks. We'll be on free radio on Thursday night, probably.
Okay,
I'll give you a card.
Thank you.
And one thing we didn't pursue was what happened at the psych ward with this shot. That's become an issue in other cities where the standards that allow psychiatric authorities to forcibly medicate people has been dangerously loosened. There used to be a rather, not terribly protective standard, but a better standard, which said unless you were a danger to yourself, a danger to others, or gravely disabled, you couldn't be committed under the so-called 5150 law for 72 hours. those you had to establish those three conditions, and you had theoretically a right under the Reese decision to request the least intrusive medical intervention. For example, if you didn't want to be Thorazine to death or lithium doubt or treated with any of the other new atypical medications, you could say so and demand a hearing on the subject. I tried to pursue this issue 10 or 15 years ago with George Cavallo. I could never get him. Well, it was hard to get him. He's a patient advocate. Who's supposed to be defending people in this regard, not as an attorney, but to advise them once they're in the psych wards or psych ward at Dominican Hospital. I'm not even quite sure what the status is. The psychiatric rights organization that used to be monitoring this, PERC, has gone. I ran into Jane Kaiser, who was formerly the head of it, and there's been no replacement organization. They used to have a display every year in the library opposing ECT, compulsory electroshock therapy. And that, I believe, no longer happens. So what's passed in recent years has been Laura's Law, which is a law that essentially, as I said, loosens the standards for being able to commit someone for 72 hours, then for longer periods of time under 5250. I think it's for 14 days. It essentially requires you have some sort of psychiatric history and that there's a danger in the future. You may be vulnerable. I've got to look up the wording of this law. It's being implemented on a county-by-county basis. But unfortunately, with the cops killing so many people with mental illness classifications, and of course, there being the scandal with treatment facilities, treatment is used in quotes, around the state and the country being eliminated for budget cuts so they can spend more money, to arm different sides in civil wars abroad and send American troops to defend the 700 to 1,000 foreign bases over there, which Bernie Sanders is not talking about, by the way, for all you Sanders fans. Not that it makes any difference anymore, since he's, and always has been, a doomed candidate, not so much because the people don't support even positions further to the left than he advocates, but because he's been a Democratic Party loyalist throughout all this, and will continue to be. I'm pretty sure. I'd like to see that differently, but, that's not how it works, and that's not what he would do, and that's not his record. Anyway, Laura's Law and the issue of what Santa Cruz is doing about this is an important one. I've also interviewed Sylvia Karras, who has been involved in a lot of these issues in the past. She's very reticent to talk on the air, and that's too bad. We need people. She's a very knowledgeable person. I hope we can find, there probably are people who are more knowledgeable. I think Jennifer Gosk and Coral Brune have had some experience with these issues, and they were interviewed on this show, or they were actually interviewers on this show when we had former Boston Globe writer and now author Robert Whitaker, whose famous book, Mad in America, produced all kinds of significant controversy in the medical community by pointing out and documenting the fact that all the psychiatric medications are essentially less effective in most cases than not medicating people at all over the long run. And that finding, which a lot of former psychiatric victims would have attested to decades before, has at least resulted in, Whitaker was invited to Dominican Hospital or the psychiatric community here to give a speech a year or two ago. Anyway, we're hoping, and I guess Jennifer and Coral were part of a team on Free Radio Santa Cruz that interviewed or questioned Robert Whittaker, as was I. I invited him to come on the show after his most recent book, which is another, it was sort of the third book in the series, documenting the situation in the psychiatric pharmaceutical combine world. We haven't had that third, that was more than a third interview. We've had him on a number of times. I haven't had him on the recently, but hope to.
So again, we're talking with...
My name is Julie Shaw.
And you say that you're concerned about the arrests of Joff, Alex, and others on Pacific Avenue?
Absolutely, because it is freedom of expression is my concern, and I believe the Pacific Justice Institute has been partaking in Friends of the Courts procedures or protocols in order to stop the oppression of free speech in cities.
And Joff and Alex, for all you newcomers, are two painters who have been twice arrested in recent days for having their art displays outside the blue bracketed areas or blue boxes on Pacific Avenue. They were most recently arrested on May 1st, taken to jail and released after 7 hours. And I think they released their property as well, though I'm not sure. I did run into Alex and Joff yesterday on Pacific Avenue. They're still reluctant about giving any information about their court dates, which I guess we're going to have to sniff out ourselves, because it's a public issue. And the idea that they want to keep this whole thing under wraps and engage in some, for fear there will be disruption in the courtroom, I think that was their concern yesterday, is pretty ridiculous. And again, I have a tendency to pander to folks. I want to be a nice guy. I need to be a little more aware of the famous slogan that used to be on the newspaper, the Anderson Valley Advertiser, which wasn't about advertising at all, but it was a newspaper up in Boonville. Is that the name of it? Boonville? Up in Mendocino County, which had a lot of good articles and still does, although I don't have time to read them. But the slogan on the AVA was newspapers should have no friends. And I think that's true to some extent with broadcasters trying to report what's going on, although privately, of course, that's a sad fate to consign yourself to, because friendship is an important part of life. Anyway, to get back to Joff and Alex, the artists who were arrested in a massive display of police force on May 1st, and a somewhat smaller but still absurdly overreacting police activity, I think, a week or two before that, when they were also arrested for being outside the blue boxes. There were, I guess, 8 or 9 cops. And you can read about this on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. They have returned, and they are displaying their stuff again. They are insistent on their rights, which I commend them for. But they also have this naive faith in the court system locally, which I deplore. And they don't want to really rely on or even have much solidarity with either public support for them in a strong way or solidarity with other people who are facing the same kind of intimidation, as far as I know. For example, they didn't show up at city council where they had an opportunity to be on television and bring their paintings and say they busted us and let the community, not the council, which doesn't give a shit, but the community, which sees the activity on television, because the media, as far as I know, has not covered this at all. Maybe it has. I don't follow the mainstream media that closely, but I hadn't heard that it has. And if it has, good, but one should use every opportunity to publicize these abuses, because they outrage basic decency and traditional Santa Cruz standards, not to mention broader American constitutional standards. There needs to be broader solidarity on these issues, I believe. However, tempting it may be to think, well, if we only get rid of this, the despised groups, if we indicate we're not communists and we're not anarchists and we're not homeless and we're not panhandlers, we have a legitimate reason to be here, and then, you know, everything's going to be fine. But again, although it's not always true and it can be a cliche, the old German Niemöller statement, first they came for the mental patients, and I was not a mental patient, so I did nothing. Then they came for the communists, but I wasn't a communist, so I did nothing, and so forth. And finally, when they came for me, there was nobody left to speak out. That is not always true, but it's still something worth seriously considering when you maintain a silence because you think your association with discredited groups that are being persecuted is going to impact you. So if only you'll be safe if only you keep a low profile. Admittedly, you know, there's an argument for low profiles. From, you know, going to jail publicly is not always a good strategy, and it can deplete your resources and ruin your health, and it's not always the best thing to do. You know, particularly if you're, you know, you don't have the numbers. And sometimes even, you know, even if you don't have the numbers, it can be inspirational. I mean, he didn't go to jail, but one guy who set himself on fire in Tunisia, a vendor, actually, who was facing absurd, well, I don't recall the specific abuses, but he was being abused by the Tunisian police. He sparked the Arab Spring, which has sort of turned into, Egyptian dictatorships, Libyan civil war, and Syrian civil war with ISIS and so forth. But it's also resulted in democratic reforms in other countries, and the Occupy movement the next year, and the protests against neoliberalism throughout the world, and that are still going on in France now, as I understand it. Massive strikes and protests against the attacks on labor unions there. But what about Santa Cruz? Well, here's the voice from the street.
There seems to be some movement, and so
Julie,
I think
Shaw,
that concerned citizens might want to locate the Pacific Justice Institute on Facebook. I think Brad Dacus is the president's name, and I think he's very approachable via email, or to telephone him and to let him know what's going on in Santa Cruz. I encourage people to do that.
And we've been, again, listening to the word.
Julie Shaw.
Thanks, Julie. Colin, anything you want to say about the whole issue?
Yeah. Hang on, give me a second. Where's my phone go? He already ate. Don't let his dad let
him
spoil it. Go ahead. Hey, Robert, so I got this article on my phone here, and it's in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, Tuesday, October 26th, or April 26th, excuse me. So it's about 2 weeks ago. And it's called Santa Cruz City Council Forms Homelessness Ad Hoc Committee. So people can go look that up on the Sentinel website if you want to see for yourself. And basically what it is, there's David Terrazas, Pamela Comstock, and Cynthia Chase from the City Council are going to go form this committee, and they're going to solve the problem of homelessness. It's going to be freaking amazing.
They're pretty amazing people, Colin.
Because listen to what they're going to do. They're going to do coordinated regional action-oriented focus. So they're going to throw meaningless bureaucratic jargon at the homeless problem, and that's going to fix everything.
I have a question for Colin. What do you think about the new library? Was she a president? There's a new woman coming from Minnesota for the Santa Cruz Library. I think her husband, I think his name is John Curry. I think he was the Minnesota Land Trust board member. Or
the point is, what do you think about that?
I did some research, and it looks as if that library that she was involved in had free lunches for homeless people, and they had a social worker come and do an outreach an hour a day.
I mean, that sounds like maybe some good will come of that. It's the first I've heard of it, so I don't really feel...
Nemes. Sue Nemitz. N-E-M-I-T-Z, Susan, or Sue Nemitz.
And I haven't heard a lot of abuses recently, although at the library, the main library. However, that was a site, we heard from Robert that earlier that he was harassed by a security guard for lying on a bench near the library. The library grounds have been declared a park. That is to say, there's no fountains, there's no beautiful walkways. There are a few benches around the edges of the library. There's no open green space. It's as far from a park as you might imagine. But it's, again, this circumstantial and opportunistic designation of an area as a park so it can be closed at the stroke of a pen by the head of the Parks and Rec Department. There's a new head whose name I can never quite pronounce, Mauro Gara, something like that. I'll get it right as I keep a closer eye on what's going on. So there's no, like the City Council courtyard area, like Pacific Avenue, like the Poganip, like Loudon Nelson Park, like all the other parks in town, Garfield Park, Laurel Park, which is the same as Loudon Nelson. There are suddenly closing hours. Actually, some of the parks have been closed for many years at night. But more recently, powers given to the Parks and Rec, it was actually a decade ago, to close without even consulting, getting the okay from the Parks and Rec Commission, or the City Council, has resulted in the imperious and selective and targeted use of this sudden designation of areas as closed after a certain hour. And even during a certain very limited period of time. So, for instance, this is being done to exclude homeless people, protesters. The public generally, of course, suffers because of this. But I think the main targets are poor people who use these areas because they have no other spaces to use. And it's happened recently at City Council for the last 3 or 4 months, and you'll hear about this in interviews with activist Keith McHenry of Food Now Bombs, if not later in this show than on Sunday when I'll be coming back for a longer show, that they've roped off or cordoned off areas that are near the City Council chambers during the day when City Council's meeting and people would normally be assembling there. In order to, they don't give an explanation. They just post little signs. Don't come into this area. You're not allowed to. City Parks and Rec has cordoned this off. And if the area is being used by a specialized group other than a homeless civil rights group, such as happened, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago, when there was a youth group there. Not only are other groups excluded and told, oh, this group has reserved the area, but they don't attempt to mask the area off, to set up these cordons, these lanyards, these kind of thou shalt not cross tape, which has been put up there. You know, which kind of suggests the idea that what homeless advocates need to do, what Food Now Bonds need to do, is simply inform the city that it will be using this area during the City Council meetings, that the entire public is welcome, but that it doesn't want to be excluded from the area. But of course, that may involve trying to get a permit, which may cost money. And also, Food Not Bombs, as an organization, has had a principle of not trying to apply for permits because the Constitution, as Occupy activists used to put it back in 2011, the Constitution is our permit. And that's certainly true. And again, these areas are roped off, even though nobody's using them. They've been doing this, the city authorities have been doing this, area near the City Council chambers, near the City Council bathrooms, large amounts of space that people would normally assemble in, in order to, according to, I'm not sure if I'm getting this from secondhand from City Administrator Bren Lehr or from Sergeant Bush, who's often the Sergeant at Arms at the council meetings and patrolling about. This is being done because they think it's too disturbing to have people outside during the city council meeting, which, of course, is outrageous. If you have a problem with people disturbing the city council, then you arrest them, or you warn them and give them a chance to leave. If they don't leave, you cite them or arrest them. If you don't want to do that, then you endure whatever goes on, but you don't make the whole area forbidden to the entire community, particularly during city council meetings when people would naturally assemble. It's another kind of outrage that just people blithely allow to happen as the police state deepens in Santa Cruz. And that's part of the police state, because you're going to be relying on the police, fear of police or threat of police, to exclude and people from public areas and to shrink usable public spaces. So let's continue with more from the Red Church on Monday.
Past the library board, too, but we'll see. And get past David Terrazas and all the other clowns who are on the board.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
And thank you. We've been talking with...
Oh, Colin, and I just wanted to comment just one or two more things about this article. Haven't been horribly impressed with Rochelle Yerroyan, but she does have a quote here where she says, isn't this just like all the other freaking committees you people have put together to solve the homeless problem that never solved the homeless problem? How is this any different? So I'll give her some points for that. And also it was mentioned that there was public comment about how if you're going to put together a committee to help homeless people, you should have... Crazy idea, actual homeless people on the committee.
They're unqualified.
Right? We have to have upper middle class people who are experts on homelessness to come in and tell the rest of us what to think. But anyhow, that sarcasm aside, I think that that's really the litmus test of whether they're being serious about this or they're just, finding another way to spend taxpayer money on fluffing themselves up. If they actually go through with it and put real, honest-to-God people who've lived on the streets and actually understand what that whole experience is like and what goes on with that, if they put people like that on the council, then maybe they're actually starting to take that seriously. But with this city council, I don't expect much.
They actually had a homeless issues task force in 2000 that did have homeless people on it. It called for the end of the camping ban. It called for all kinds of things the council ignored. And what they did at the council meeting where this was proposed was the reason Rochelle Yerroyan talked is she doesn't want anything. Not that this was worth a shit, but the idea was this is their sort of cover motion, having killed the sleeping ban reform from about 2 months ago. At least this is my analysis. And instead, Yerroyan only wants, it would have involved having a staff member, it would have involved some kind of public input. She did not want that to happen. She just wanted to, wait for the county to get interested and have then some council members get together with the county if necessary. At least that was my reading. But as you say, it's more bullshit.
Colin, has anybody come up to you and asked you if you wanted to be on any of these councils, any of these committees, ad hoc committees?
I'm still waiting for the big invitation. I got to tell you, my door is open. I'm ready to... tell them to fuck off. I'm ready to
engage in conversation.
I will always engage.
Dialogue.
I will always chatter, as you can hear, endlessly. We've been talking again with
Colin
and
Julie. Thank you.
And actually, I wouldn't be involved in such a group. Although I'd be happy to have dialogue with any members of the group and do so publicly in this kind of a forum on the air or in other public meetings, because these are front groups set up not to address issues. They are set up to avoid issues. They are set up to give the illusion of addressing issues. There are obvious things that need to be done to address issues, emergency campgrounds, obviously massive funding for housing, taking over vacant buildings, eliminating the laws that criminalize people being in parks and other spaces at night, provided they're not engaging in criminal behavior. Instead, all kinds of money is being poured into policing and study of the problems. This is crap. And it is, part of it is a form of liberal illusion. Some of it is sort of a cynical attempt to get funding from state and federal authorities that are aware that homelessness is a huge reality and a growing problem and a consequence of all kinds of the same neoliberal policies that these bodies massively support, but they want to appear to be doing something about it. One would assume to avoid real responses from the community underneath, you know, like revolutionary responses or direct action responses or angry pressure that forces them even through the representative or misrepresentative bodies to actually do something.
So I'm sitting having a bite to eat, which is rare for me here, and there's another individual who's eating food while standing who has been refused the right to go out the door with his plate of food, told that they will call the police and he can't do it and so forth, although another person did slip out with a cup of coffee. And our man here is eating, but not happy with us. I'm not happy either.
And when I talked to Joel Miller, who was the former pastor at this church, at least the head of this program, he may still be the pastor there, I'm not sure, but he no longer runs the program. He hasn't since February. He told me this was part of their attempt to create community. He said that was one of the reasons they ran people off the lawn, that they were insisting that only a limited number of people could come in, and they had to get little red tickets. It's depressing to see people who you have, to some extent, commended, I have, for at least one meal or two meals a week being provided at the church, an opportunity for a place for people to gather, although it is being done, under religious auspices, at least the first hour from 5 to 6 is, the second hour from 6 to 7. This happens on Monday. You want to go take a look and see what's happening. And the food's pretty good, you know, it's okay. I enjoyed the lasagna. It was tasty. But to, you know, play into this whole repressive scene regarding homeless people, I think it's probably pressure from his constituency, his religious constituency, maybe from neighbors, maybe from people like Cynthia Matthews, who owns the historic house across the street. He fought off in 2009 an attempt to remove him, to defrock him, masterminded by Matthews and a few others in the congregation I think she was in the congregation, she was certainly part of the effort, and she had to go to the ecclesiastical courts and spend $25,000. You can read more about it on ndbay.org/Santa Cruz. Look up Pastor Miller and also Becky Johnson, who wrote the article.
And our one of the guys who was in line, I think, was just doing the policing. So it's because involving the unhoused or the unhoused looking to police other unhoused people. It's so depressing. He blocks the door. You might try going out the grass, standing around where you're not allowed.
And equally depressing was my failure 7 feet away to speak up and say, why are you blocking the doorway from someone wanting to take a plate of food out? That's outrageous. I needed to say that, and I didn't. And so I was one of those who was silent and colluded, perhaps thinking, oh, I want to be able to come back next week and make a speech here. Oh, you know, I want to be able to go around and interview people in line. Oh. I think I was wrong in not speaking up.
To be
Once you get inside with your little red ticky, don't get your food outside. Steve, how do you feel being part of a repressive group like this?
Well, I'm going to establish this as headquarters for a Steve Place for the 2016 City Council campaign, so I'm perfectly comfortable with being here on a forbidden zone, restricted. Nothing can tie me down.
I see, except it will just tie all your supporters down.
There you go.
Maybe that.
And I'm talking to City Council candidate Steve Place, who also spreads cream cheese on bagels every week at the Red Church. I was trying to raise the issue with him. I guess I was feeling guilty and angry at how I didn't respond to it in a vocal way. And he ducks it, too. That doesn't justify my ducking it. In fact, it makes it even worse.
That's the point.
It could be.
So, you know, I asked you to take a moment outside because you are on half a dozen boards and have numerous updates. What updates do you have for us?
Well, as you know, we'll be over at City Council tomorrow talking about the proposed ordinance. I've taken a kind of look at that. The ACLU is taking a look at it. I may be speaking on their behalf because we're not really happy about restrictions on commercial speech. But I read your email with interest, and I do think that there's an abridgment of public input because this certainly should have gone before the Downtown Commission.
And we're going to have to hear more of Steve's analysis on Sunday, perhaps. I'm playing it then because I want to play an interview with Mark Maron, the attorney in Sacramento, who has been defending homeless folks. I'm going to let the interview pretty much speaks for itself, and that's going to be it for this edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. If you wish to get in touch with any comments, it's 423-4833. You can call area code 831, and I will pass on your thoughts, if you wish, at the next radio broadcast. And again, pretty soon we should be doing call-ins, but don't wait for that. If you've got some thoughts about what's going on or you have some news updates, call me at 831-423-4833, and we'll take it from there.
On the line with Attorney Mark Maron, attorney and activist Mark Maron of Sacramento, who has been fighting for I'm not sure how long to secure the rights of folks outside in Sacramento. How long have you been at this, Mark?
Since 2008.
Oh, not as long as I thought. Sacramento Shock, the Sacramento Homelessness Organizing Committee, has been doing it for some time before that, right?
Oh, yeah. I got involved when people reported that their property was being taken, homeless people, that their property was being taken and just tossed into a dumpster by city police and county sheriffs. And so we put together a lawsuit, and as soon as we filed that lawsuit, the cops stopped seizing and discarding property, and that led to the encampment, which swelled to about 400 tents behind Blue Diamond and Smud in Sacramento. Became known as Oprah's campground, Oprah's Tent City, because it got national publicity. And I've been involved since then trying to get the city to permit homeless people to be someplace without being in violation of the anti-camping ordinance, and also a place where they could leave their stuff with some kind of security along the lines of what they have in Seattle, the tent cities or Nicholsvilles up there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been my primary focus for the last 8 years or so.
Now in Fresno, as you may know, a bunch of high-powered attorneys used photos from Mike Rose and his daughter documenting just the kind of seizure of property you're talking about in Sacramento and destruction of homeless property to win $2.3 million, as well as an injunction that actually kind of perpetuated the survival of homeless encampments for about 3 or 4 years thereafter. Is there a reason you didn't proceed with the lawsuit, given the property that was already lost?
Well, we did proceed with the lawsuit. We got over $1 million the people who lost property. Plus, we got a change in policy, so they're no longer seizing and discarding property. Their tactics, however, have been modified. What they're doing now is they're just telling people they have to leave, and if they cite them more than once, they arrest them, but then they pound the property so that it's theoretically recoverable, but it becomes difficult. The city or county will only hold the property which is not considered garbage and isn't spoiling. So that's not the main problem now. The main problem is getting someplace where homeless people have some security and can be without being molested and arrested.
This was the Lair case that we were talking about?
Yes, that's the Lair case. And we also have another case challenging the anti-camping ordinance. It's called Allen versus City of Sacramento. And that went up to the Court of Appeal and back down, and it's now in the trial court. And the issue there is whether the anti-camping ordinance is just a device by which homeless people are being discriminated against. So it's a question of equal protection under the law. It doesn't seem that there are many people who have homes and apartments who are being arrested for camping outdoors.
Of course, you know, that obviously it's the main number of people who are outdoors are those who are without permanent lodging. But,
well, that's true. But the interesting thing is that under the anti-camping ordinance, the definition is anybody who's who's spending one or more nights outdoors. And in the city of Sacramento, people typically on Black Friday, for instance, are out there the day before, and they're camping out in front of these stores. Also, if you want to get your kid into the right magnet school in Sacramento, you camp out the night before. And this is well known, and we don't see any of these largely affluent, or if not affluent, at least homed or housed people being arrested for violating the ordinance.
Yeah, the same thing happens in Santa Cruz when, you know, fancy new movies come to town and youths and other fans camp out outside the movie theater.
Sure.
And I think that's still happening at places like the Cinema 9 here in Santa Cruz. And I'm using local references because this is mainly a local show.
Sure.
So what's the actual wording of the Sacramento anti-camping ordinance? You mentioned some of it. Does that pretty much cover it?
No. What it says is that it's illegal to camp outdoors on public or private property. It says that owners of private property may allow friends or family to camp, but only for one consecutive night, whatever one consecutive night means. And then it defines camping as using camping paraphernalia. It defines camping paraphernalia as pretty much anything. And then it says, or living outdoors. Well, anyone who's walking outside or standing outside is living. And if they're outdoors, they're outdoors. So they're living outdoors. And homeless people are therefore living outdoors their entire lives. So just being is illegal. And it can be defined that way. It doesn't have to be at night. You can be found to be camping outdoors in violation of the anti-camping ordinance in Sacramento if you're sitting on a bench in the middle of the day. You might have a little, like a sleeping bag or a backpack beside you, and they identify you as homeless. You're in violation of the ordinance.
Now, in Santa Cruz, there was recently an attempt by the former mayor, Don Lane, who for 20 years had no problem with the sleeping ban here in Santa Cruz. Our camping ordinance specifically criminalizes the act of sleeping after 11 o'clock at night. And that makes between 11 and 8:30, if you fall asleep on any public or private property or inside any structure not intended for human occupancy, by which they mean a residence. So, for example, in theory, anybody who sleeps in a movie theater, an office building, on top of the roof of a residence is illegal, or on the, I guess a porch wouldn't necessarily be legal.
But sleeping was challenged here in Santa Cruz as, you know, a violation, given the fact that I imagine you're using sort of similar arguments in court, that although the word sleeping doesn't appear in your ordinance, that the shelters are either non-existent or full, not to mention wretched, and there just is no proportionate coverage of the number of folks who are outside.
Well, that ordinance sounds vulnerable to me to a constitutional attack.
Well, we need you down here then, Mark. I mean, you know...
Not that far away from Sacramento.
Yeah, well, you're welcome to come down. I will personally buy you, as I often say, a hamburger. Or a veggie burger, depending on your taste.
Either one, frankly. I'm an omnivore.
Oh, good. Let me ask this. I wanted to point out, in 1997, when we had massive, we had an 8.5 month sleep out in front of our city hall. And it was actually kind of a strange sleep out. We slept during the day and we stayed awake at night in order to beat the legalistic wording of the camping ordinance, or some of us.
Sure.
But some people were ticketed for sleeping, at night. And the ruling of Judge Kangaroo Kelly, as we called him, was that provided a city had an option to sleep during the day, the nighttime ban on sleeping was not unconstitutional. So you'd have your work cut out for you with this series of courts we got here.
That's hilarious. Okay. Well, I guess the other thing I'd want to just report on in terms of what we're doing in Sacramento is we're pushing for permitted tent cities, and we're going to identify a whole bunch of sites that are totally useful and appropriate for this kind of activity, and then we're just going to take people around and have little mini hearings at each one of these sites so that we can show that there are all these potential places that could be used, and it's only a few strident voices that will travel from place to place that are saying no, you can't accommodate the homeless anywhere. But otherwise, we think we're going to break through this. So there's no reason why the city should prefer to have homeless people sleeping out in the streets and alleys and byways, doorways and places like that under bushes in parks, rather than actually have them legally sleeping in a place where they can get up in the morning, leave their stuff, go get showered, dressed, and get out there and get job interviews and work and do other things that will allow them to get out of their circumstances. It's absolutely inane for the city to insist that none of the better circumstances for them to be just dragging their stuff around from pillar to post every day and not have any place where they can be collected legally. I think the city is just afraid that if the homeless people are actually permitted to be any place, that their numbers will swell and they'll get a bad reputation or something like that. But it's heartless, cruel, inhumane, and unconstitutional. So that's where the battle is now in Sacramento.
Yeah, I think the claim here is the so-called, and I think spurious, magnet effect. You know, that if one city does this without other cities doing it at the same time, that city will become the place where all the homeless folks come from all over the nation to sleep on the streets or sleep in the parks. We're talking with Mark Maron, attorney from Sacramento. How much time you got, Mark, to talk?
I have another few minutes.
Okay, well, I was going to briefly mention that you yourself actually tried to establish a campground yourself some years ago, or a vacant lot, and you were sabotaged by the city. Is that a fair statement?
Well, that's true. They came after me for supposedly creating a nuisance, and the fines were building up, and the homeless folks who were camping on the property decided that to spare me the economic cost of maintaining this campground, they'd just vacate. But we've been fighting ever since. And because the city has a city council that has districts, each of the representatives on the council says, well, You know, my constituents don't want it in our district, but if someone wants, someone else wants to have it, that's fine with me. Then when you go around and you identify sites in these districts, it turns out that they're all the same, that the local council people say they're playing the NIMBY card too. So it's strange that these public servants think more about their own hides and reputations than they do about actually doing good for the people they supposedly represent.
Typical, I'd say. Disability has been a hook that the ACLU in Berkeley back in, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago at a state conference was considering using, Los Angeles ACLU, which attorneys from that group were suggesting that because most homeless folks have some kind of disability, I don't like this mythology, skunks, punks, and drunks, that they're all addicts, that they're all dual diagnosis, that they're this, they're that. I mean, getting outside can really wear on you, and that's for sure. And obviously,
you weren't sick before you went outside. You certainly were sick afterwards.
Right. And the question is, though, is disability, with federal disability protections supposedly being what they are, a hook that you've considered, or the other attorneys in Sacramento have considered?
Yeah, we considered it, and we tried to get the disability rights organization interested, but it wasn't quite up their alley at the time. So, and now they're concerned even about tent cities. They say, well, gee, are you going to be able to accommodate the disabled? Well, sure, to some extent, we can accommodate disabled. Disabled are presently in wheelchairs, sleeping outside. So yes, we can accommodate them, but we're finding that. You know, the ADA requirements would really prohibit a tent city. You'd have to pave ways. It's kind of hard to upgrade a tent city. So I don't know how we'd use a disability law to force a city to accommodate homeless people per se.
What about simply to stop the harassment? Suggesting that harassment of disabled people when there's no shelter is not just a form of cruel and unusual punishment, but violates federal law.
Look, I think anything we can possibly throw at these laws to slow down their enforcement, to get them off the books, is good. So I'm not opposed to anything. I'm just saying that we've tried lots of measures, and so far we haven't found a responsive ear on the bench. It's not to say that... it won't happen, but it just hasn't happened yet here in Sacramento.
So there hasn't been what you tried to say, hey, these people are disabled, you're violating federal law by arresting them for sleeping or arresting them for camping. I see sleeping doesn't appear in your ordinance, which...
Well, here's the thing about criminalization. They can arrest people, but they can never convict them. We will mount defenses for homeless people who are going to trial, and the case will always be dismissed because they know that you can't get a jury to convict somebody for sleeping outdoors when the person's homeless. But in terms of enjoining arrests, that's very difficult to do just because of the separation of powers. You can get an ordinance declared unconstitutional if, in fact, the judge has the guts to do it. But... Getting a judge in advance to enjoin police agencies from arresting people under a statute that hasn't yet been declared unconstitutional is a very uphill battle.
Hmm. Talk a bit about the current protest, where it led to in terms of the city's, it sounds like, show trips to Seattle to look at the Tent City 3, and then the unfortunate disbanding of the protest, which... I know you wanted to kind of mention, keep a sort of a low profile on that, but we've had the same problems with protests here in Santa Cruz, and I think they are universal problems that protests have at different points, which is there's differences between activists, there's a question of whether you have drug-free or not in situations.
We started, not we, but homeless people, homeless advocates and homeless people, started a protest out in front of City Hall in Sacramento on December the 8th. It went 24/7 for almost 3 months, and really was one of the stimulants for the city to take a new look at what it was going to be doing to deal with homeless people. Not to say that it changed its policies, but just the look. When a subcommittee of the city council was organized to address homeless issues, the protest shifted to the Capitol. And there, frankly, factions within the protest led to its abandonment. And those you mentioned were, are people going to abstain from all intoxicants while they're protesting? Are they going to maintain a certain kind of adhesiveness, reaching out to the public, and demonstrating for specific changes? Or are they just going to look at this as, well, here, this is a little safe spot for us to hang out? And, frankly, the internal stresses of being months and months out on the streets in a protest led to its deterioration.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, there were 71 arrests during that period of time, and that sort of guts the energy of some of these people who are otherwise really committed to change.
Was this the first lengthy sleep-out protest either, I guess, initially in front of City Hall and then in front of the Capitol?
Yes. The first of which I'm aware, other than, of course, just encampments. Many encampments have lasted much longer than 3 months, especially if they're out of sight. And in the American River Parkway, there's a green strip that goes for miles, and homeless people have sort of tucked themselves away in the, under the kudzu and the vines and the deep underbrush, and maintained a low profile for years, frankly. There's one place in Sacramento, it's called The Island, which the only problem is it floods regularly when there's water. And they've been there for, 10 or more years. And it's only when there are fires that the enforcement of the anti-camping ordinance really targets those areas.
In Santa Cruz, there's been an intensification of anti-homeless ordinances above and beyond the camping ordinance here, including trespass ordinances that criminalize being in parks after dark, being on most public property after dark. For example, City Hall, normally an area you would think where people are allowed to protest. In fact, it's in Salinas, where they're continuing nightly protests, it's illegal to set your stuff down on the sidewalk during the day, but it's legal to set up a tent at night. And so there's been this ongoing protest in Salinas in order to raise the same issues you're raising in Sacramento.
Yeah, it's horrible. Of course, there are the ordinances that target, quote, aggressive panhandling, which then cordon off huge areas of the city where you otherwise would normally panhandle. And, of course, the sit-lie ordinances and the public urination defecation defecation ordinances, those are all things that are targeting homeless people. Trying to get the city to just put a public bathroom up. The last argument they had here in Sacramento was that, well, gee, it would cost about $100,000 a year for each bathroom because they'd have to police it, they'd have to have guards at the bathroom, hey there, your 30 seconds are up, come on out, you're doing something illegal. It's absolutely inane. You have corporations that are interested in homeless issues. You have religious organizations that would just willingly put up porta potties for the use of the public. But the city has an ordinance that says, no, you can't do that. You have to have a permit to erect one, and it has to be tied to a specific period of time and a specific event. And all of this is really designed to just make it impossible for homeless people or typical homeless people to live outside. Yet they do. And then the public complains and the city complains about the natural consequences of living outside when there are no bathroom facilities available. So that's the reason why the homeless bill of rights has to be passed on a statewide level.
Yeah. You know, because in Santa Cruz, another issue, and I guess maybe in Sacramento perhaps even more, police abuse.